One call. I call a meeting to order. Looks like we have a quorum, and the first order of business, approval of minutes from March 13, 2024. And has everybody had a chance to look at the minutes? Representative Farr, did you move the minutes approved?
So moved.
Thank you, sir. Discussion and motions to the approval? None? The minutes are approved.
Do we have to vote?
Can we vote?
All right, let's go to our first test.
Don't we have to vote?
Mr. Chair, we can't.
I'm sorry, Chair, it's just a recommendation, okay? You're the chair, you can.
Oh, all those in the favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed to nay.
Just stick with our side. We'll make sure.
The minutes are approved. Thank you.
Now you can have it.
It sounds like play committee, but thanks. Let's go to our first order of business. It's from the Minnesota Humanities Centers. Welcome back, Director Kevin Lindsay, to the Legacy Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's my pleasure to address you today to give you an update on the Legacy Committee. Our legacy work that we're doing on behalf of this committee through the cultural heritage grants. To my immediate left is Tristy Auger, our grants manager. And then one more to the left is Casey DeMaray, who also works with us on the grants program. We prepared a slide presentation for you, and I also believe that it's within your meeting packet as well. So the very first slide just gives a quick background for folks about the Minnesota Humanities Center. We created back in 1971. The very first funding from the National Endowment for us to provide a grant was made in October. Appreciate that we're also testifying here today with the Historical Society. The history of the Minnesota Humanities Center is it started inside of the Historical Society before it was then launched as an independent nonprofit in 1971. The mission there about communities, ourselves, and our histories, I would say you see that a lot within the grant applications that were submitted to us, is that people feel that it's very important to be able to talk about and explore what it means to be human, their stories as it relates to their communities, and their understanding of the world. So we really appreciate being given this opportunity to make that type of humanity connection to people all throughout the state of Minnesota. Again, as I said, this is an overview, and we expect that there will be some questions there at the end, but we've tried to be as thorough as possible as to our process. So as we mentioned, this a little over $12 million was given to us at the start of the biennium. It falls through five different grant areas. We can go to the next slide. $8 million for cultural heritage grants, $100,000 for emergency response grants, $750,000 for capacity building, $3.2 million for children's museums, and then $300,000 for civics. I want to pause there just for a second as it relates to the children's museum, because within the statute, it provided that $1 million was a direct appropriation to the children's museum. So before we got started with the competitive grant application process, we met with the children's museum and began the process for that grant. And that grant has already been executed, and that's being implemented now by the children's museum. Let's talk a little bit about the pre-application process. I appreciate the conversations with Representative Herr and others on this respective committee about the experiences that nonprofit organizations were having with foundations. So we've tried to be really intentional in streamlining the application, making it as easy as possible for applicants to be able to apply. We also really appreciate Tristy and Casey's work to answer questions before people filed their application, and also to provide them with technical assistance. So again, just want to appreciate that your concerns about streamlining the application process were heard by us within how we designed and looked at it. Specifically, outreach was key also within the space, so we were able to get on the radio with 16 radio stations across the state, and specifically a lot of these radio stations would be serving BIPOC communities. We advertised, and this is just a handful, but we just wanted to be intentional in mentioning Hmong Times, Sahan Journal, 3 Hmong television stations as well, getting the word out. On the more traditional, larger media broadcast outlets, we also had an opportunity and appreciate WCCO allowing us to get the word out, TV and radio, about these. And then, again, media screens, and that can be a variety of different different type of non-traditional television kind of media connection. We go to the next slide. The 7 informational sessions, the 263 participants within it, they ask very good questions that help us sharpen the FAQ, and I think that also guided us as to thinking about the needs of cultural organizations going forward within this space. And I think we'll wait until after we've gone through all the applications, but please know that before the next legislative session, there'll be some ideas that we have gleaned from those conversations that we had in the application process, as well as going through and working with grant organizations. The 128 applicants, the 30 minutes, had a brief conversation with Eric Jolly from the St. Paul Foundation, talking about the impact as it relates to having these one-on-one type of conversations, what that meant for grant organizations. And then specifically, penned a paper with applicants, 86 individuals took, or individual, 86 individual organizations, not individuals themselves, took us up on the offer of actually working alongside them and working on their respective applications. So again, kudos both to Tristy and Casey and then others on the staff for their hard work. The initial review, once an application comes in, we ensure the application is complete. Having practiced law, sometimes if you don't submit your application properly, it can be bounced by the court. We're not that strict as relates to it. We do give folks the opportunity to rectify something that they've missed. We give them a time frame in which to supply that information. All took us up on that if there was an omission, so no one got knocked out because of that. We also make sure that they're complying within the statutory requirements set forth within the statute here. The second piece is giving information to the independent review panel. We do provide an overview of how the independent review panel should be looking at the respective applications, allowing them an opportunity to ask questions of us before receiving the applications. We also try to be, because specifically the nature of the cultural heritage grants, we try to be very specific in pulling individual leaders from those respective cultural communities. So you will see individuals from the respective communities, from the African-American community, from the Somali community, or from the Hmong community, serving as independent review panelist judges. And then lastly, again, we know that there has been some concern within the media about individual organizations in their financial capacity to be able to successfully perform. So we also took your concerns very seriously in that standpoint as well. And we do have a process to ensure that the folks that do receive the funds are capable and ready and able to be able to perform under the grant. So that then takes us to sort of like the grants themselves, and we'll kind of walk through that process of kind of where we are. So for the children's museums, we received 14 total applications. The amount that we received, just short of $4 million. Again, in the competitive bucket, there was $2.2 million. So it was pretty close to sort of the amount of the request from children's museums, but there were several children's museums that I'm sure will be disappointed that we weren't able to fully fund their respective request. Again, the average grant request, just a little over $250,000. If we go to the next slide. This is the list of all the children's museums that received funding through the children's museum grant line. And then we've also identified the amount for each of those children's museums. We're just in the process now of having the ink dry on executing the agreements, but we have outlined and reviewed their application and gotten verbal confirmation. We've also published a press release identifying all the children's museums in the space. That then takes us to civics. In civics, there was 31 total applicants, just shy of 1.8 million of the request. The amount of funding that was provided by this committee was $300,000. The average grant request, just over $125,000. When I have had an opportunity to tour the state and have conversations with folks within Minnesota, I am surprised how much interest there is on civics grants. So I was not surprised that this number, we far exceeded the 300,000 that had been appropriated by the committee. I think that there's probably also a lot of interest, again, around the 250th commemoration and the signing of the Declaration of Independence within this space. And I think because of your good work here as a legislature as a whole, as it relates to amplifying education in the space of civics, there's more interest within the state in this respective area. I would probably see more growth going on here. Go to the next slide. We've identified the seven organizations here that received the $300,000 within the civics grants area. And then takes us to cultural heritage capacity building. We have not made the awards yet, but we are in the process of finalizing, so this will be a little bit tentative. 130 total applications received. The amount requested by applicants exceeded $7 million. So we know from individual conversations, I see Representative Hussein, Representative Herr, I think Representative Cha, and others, yes, thank you. So in having that conversation, we knew that there would be a lot of interest on capacity building grants. So again, we're not surprised, maybe a little surprised that it was 10 times, but we knew that we would far exceed the 750,000 in that space. And again, we think that we'll probably award somewhere between 12 and 16. It depends on some of the individuals getting partial awards. It rarely happens, but sometimes people say that a partial award is not helpful to them, and then we therefore slide dollars to the other organizations, and they get a little bit more than what we'd initially allotted for a partial award. That then brings us to cultural heritage emergency response. The number of total applicants in is 12. There's two that have just recently come in to get to 12. The amount requested by applicants, a little over 300,000. I think this is in part because there might have been some confusion by grant applicants thinking that the state wanted to create an organization that would respond from a therapeutic standpoint as relates to emergency ongoing long term. Those entities or individuals that are interested in that, that feels that's more likely to be in the funding stream of DHS or the Department of Health within that space, do appreciate that there are a lot of folks that want to lean in and create something that can provide therapy and help for individuals. We did provide, and I saw several of you here at the memorial service for Tu Jerzong. We did provide funding for that respective event, and I think the other two events probably will be things that we will fund. We just need to dot some I's, cross some T's on those two. I think the 100,000 likely will be expended. The legislation provides that it could come back to the Minnesota Humanities Center on October 15th. I think I'm of the mind of just holding it as an emergency grant to allow people to continue to apply throughout the entirety of the biennium period to see if we can use all the 100,000 for that purpose. That then brings us to the cultural heritage grants program. So the total number of applicants is 387. And then this amount requested was $47,332,405.77. The average grant request, $121,000. Funds available, $8 million. And the way in which the statute reads is it suggests to us, or it actually mandates to us, that at least $2 million be provided to applicants that applied for and requested more than $150,000. You will see here that we've created a little bit of a pie chart to indicate the various communities from which the applicants identified the communities that they serve. We gave applicants the opportunity to identify multiple for organizations that serve multiple communities, and the vast majority of organizations that identified as serving multiple communities. Which again, not surprising given the feedback that I had received from various members of this committee of organizations that might be applying for grants. Let's break it down as it relates to the grants that were under 150 and those that were over 150. So the number of applicants that requested from the Minnesota Humanities Center a grant for less than $150,000, that number was 269 applicants. And again, that amount was a little over $13.7 million for that group. So in comparison, the last biennium was $5 million, which was identified for cultural heritage grants. I think the success of that program and interest within communities really in a large way explains the number of applications within the space, and I think the respective growth. The average grant request, a little over $50,000. The biennium award from last biennium from the Minnesota Humanities Center was just over $44,000. So again, for this pool, under $150,000, I'm not surprised that we saw a lot of grants at that same level in which we made awards. I'm just a little surprised, again, as to the overall number over. I think that suggests a healthy ecosystem and folks finding ways in which to put food on the table and speak to community issues and speak to things that are important to them. We may have underestimated sort of what that amount of energy would be in that space. Let's now turn to the requests that were over 150,000. So the number of requests over 150,000, we received 118 applications. And the amount of those requests tallied up is a little over $33.5 million. Again, the average grant request just for this pool, almost $300,000 for the grant request. The sense of being able to build cultural institutions within the state of Minnesota, you're seeing that within this space. There are some of the applications here and the number, just so that we're all on the same page here, we've taken out portions of the requests made by these applicants which would exceed what we could reimburse from legacy. So this $33 million, you should understand, are all things which the legacy fund could fund. And now it's really up to the independent review panel to prioritize which projects are worthy to be funded. So again, a lot of interest within the state of Minnesota to create cultural heritage organizations and to support their growth throughout the state. Talked earlier about the assembly of cultural heritage and capacity building grants by the various BIPOC communities identified within the statute. The emergency response grants, that's something that we do internally because of the quick turnaround time. It's not really feasible for us to assemble an independent review panel and then try to review it in that way. We think that that has been working well for us. We would probably continue some type of same model going forward. I think the individuals who have interest within this space, we are having conversations with our federal partner, the National Endowment for the Humanities. I was in Chicago last week and had conversations with some of their members about their grant administration program. I think we probably need to get more robust as relates to independent review panels. So don't want to say that there isn't any room for improvement, but I think we're in a pretty good spot where we are now. So in closing, NEH has renewed its United We Stand grants. These are grants that individuals can apply for at the federal level to respond to hate-based violence. The emergency grants is broader than that here at the state level. Since they have renewed, it feels like we're getting more momentum And because we're communicating maybe a little bit more effectively and clear as it relates to the real purpose for the emergency response grants, I feel pretty confident that we will probably exhaust the 100,000 that was identified by the legislature in that area. The demand for the civics grants is high. Again, it was six times what was allocated by this respective committee. And then you just saw the numbers as it relates to capacity building and cultural heritage grants. It's very high to extremely high as it relates to interest within the community for funding for the projects identified within these spaces. The numbers of Latinx, LGBTQ projects, want to make sure that they do not get lost as it relates to projects under 50 and under 150 and over 150, because there will, we're going to try and have all of our independent review panels review no more than 30 to 35 applications. We do not quite have 30 to 35 for LGBT and Latinx, but they will all be grouped together. So we will try to have as an even distribution across all the groups that are identified within the statute as possible. So with that, I'll stop to see if there are any questions that the committee has.
Thank you. Thank you, Director Lindsay, for your testimony. Before we move to member questions, Representative Hassan, would you like to acknowledge some of our special guests to the committee?
Thank you, Chair Chow, and I just want to thank you all for giving me this opportunity. We do have today in the committee Minnesota Boys and Girls Club in the state of Minnesota, who also become one of the best students in the state of Minnesota. I'm happy to have them in my district, Mount Area East Side, and I just want to give a shout out and tell them that you guys are doing a great and amazing job. And today they've been advocating for the Minnesota Boys and Girls Club for funding. This is the legacy. Welcome, and we are proud of you, and keep going. And I know you bring an A plus, but make sure the rest of the other students also follow your footsteps. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hassan, and thank you for joining us this afternoon. To member questions, Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chief Executive, for the presentation. I'm just curious, just going back to one of your page where you said people are coming in and they were asking for funding that were to start businesses and whatnot. And so can you tell me, were there some ambiguities as to why people were thinking that this could be used to fund business startup or whatnot?
Director Lindsay.
Representative, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So the emergency response grant, I distinctly remember the conversation with Representative Herr. There was a tragedy at one of the local high schools here within St. Paul, and wanted to be able to provide funding for organizations that were leaning in and facilitating conversations about how students could heal together, how staff could heal within that space, and to provide an environment for the school to continue its work going forward. I think when we announced emergency grants in that way, people probably took it a step further and thought that this would be seed funding to create an ongoing business model that could provide therapy for individuals going forward. If they were trying to create a business for therapists, I don't think the purpose for this grant would fit. So we kind of referred them, because we know that there's a shortage of therapists out there, so we referred those inquiries more to the Department of Human Services or the Department of Health.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that clarification, Director Lindsay, because that was one of my questions too. So we didn't actually fund from that $100,000 emergency fund to those individuals' requests for starting a business. Is that correct?
That is, I'm sorry, Representative, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is correct.
Thank you. And I just had a couple of questions here. And one, I wanted to just say thank you to you and your staff, Christy and Casey. You all were fantastic to work with to really try to understand the intent of what we wanted to do with some of these funds, and even just like walking organizations who were really small, who've never gone through these processes before, that you all, and I know that the time that you took to do this exceeded probably what your capacity to do this work, but you all, you know, every feedback that I got was that people were treated with respect and given the information that they needed. And so I just wanted to say thank you and kudos to you and your team for that. I did have one question regarding the and now I seem to have misplaced that. So on each of these slides, you talked about how you had a certain number you were going to award to each one. Have those individuals already been notified that they are going to be recipients of these grants, or are you still waiting to notify those organizations?
Director Lindsay?
Representative Herr, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, first off, Representative Herr, appreciate you making those comments. So we were working up to the last minute, and it was very interesting to see how many people applied in that last hour of opportunity to apply. So thank you for those kind words. The individuals who are identified within the PowerPoint with the respective dollar amount, all of those folks have been informed. The press release for civics is being prepared. The one for Children's Museum has gone out. And when we do a press release in preparation, the individuals who are identified in the press release get a heads up beforehand. So they all have received, and they knew, and they were aware that we would be here today.
Thank you. And then just one last thing is that in the page where you had the cultural heritage and the pie chart for the future, because it's hard for us to see that, and then we can't see the colors very well. So if you could just put the group next to the percentage so that we can, you know, so that when I have this later, I can, you know, follow it a little bit better. But that's just helpful for us. But again, just thank you. And this breakdown was really helpful. I appreciate it.
Representative Herr, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, will be more than happy to do that before we leave today.
Thank you. Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doing a good job over there.
Trying.
Fair enough.
It's a high pay.
He didn't ask for more money. I was.
Yeah.
Mr. Lindsay, thank you very much for coming. I was really excited. We've been trying to get you here for a couple of weeks, and I know you had some things going on, but I'm so grateful you're here. This is actually this part of the effort that we're doing here in this committee is really important, and I think the work that you do has really been incredible. I'm just kind of looking around the table, and I think you don't usually name staff, but Mike and I kind of started this whole this whole thing. Mr. Molzen, and he won't like that I'm saying it, but we started doing this. This does not exist a few years ago in the legacy space. And so this whole effort, and you've taken this and really made it better every year. And so I'm just very excited just to hear. It's, you know, the reaching into groups, and you just keep doing that and getting groups to promote growth and starting up. And, you know, a lot of people didn't know that this money existed. So you've just really led in this space. So I want to thank you. Every time you come, I learn things. I just like the civics grants. I didn't know that they were so popular. And I'm glad they are. I think learning some of these things are important. And, you know, for a healthy society and those sort of things. So that's great. The new grants that you're doing to new groups and actively, and I think Representative Herr kind of captures that. It really does take a lot of extra work and grooming that. And so I want to give you a lot of credit for taking the time and your team to make sure that, you know, we're reaching new people. Some of the older groups get a little mad, you know, if you might do a new group. You know, they might not get as much money, or they might, you know, a variety of reasons. But when I look at, like, the children's museums, some of those I had never seen before. And I'm excited to look into them and see what they are. And I'm sure they were picked for a very good reason. The other thing I want to thank, and I think this committee should know, is that part of the reason that as a committee we've encouraged going through these process with you, Mr. Lindsay, and the Historical Society and the grants is there was that article that you alluded to in the paper, and I don't want to stick my head too high because sometimes you get it chopped down, but none of our grants were in that article in the Lessard SAM space, hundreds of grants. Mr. Lindsay, in your space, hundreds of grants. Historical Society, hundreds of grants. None of them were in the news. And to me as a chair, I think as a committee, I think, and the legislature, I think that's really important that we can proudly say that there was some grant problems, but none of ours. So anyways, I don't want to stress it too much because we could be on the news, I suppose. I happen to, you know, I'm glad to represent her and, you know, the committee. We started the emergency fund last year, and I was very excited to have that, and I'm glad that you're trying to figure it out. And I was at that funeral, like you mentioned, and you hate to say that it was, I think it was important for the community to have healing, and it was, so it was neat to see in that case that we were able to help. I wasn't sure. I think there was another one that we were, I think Representative Herr and I were working on and might not have worked out or did, but anyways, thank you for working and trying to make that successful. It's a new concept, a new idea, and there are things that happen out in our communities that need some response. I actually do have a question, and I think that you just briefly mentioned it, you know, and a lot of the committees were hearing about federal dollars, and I think you have a lot of other relationships beyond Minnesota, I know, and there might be ways to bring in federal money into this space. And I just wonder if you have a question to or a answer that how we can, you know, do we have to have some matching funds in the future to get some of that? Because I think that's in Chair Lee's committee. We often have to match the money, or is it grants alone? Or so, anyways, that's kind of my question. If because it'd be nice to maximize some federal money to help build what we're doing to make it even better.
Director Lindsay. Representative, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, first off, thank you for those kind words to the staff. It's greatly appreciated. Civics, again, is not surprising to us. One of the things that we have reached out and have done, this is with program dollars, so this is not the grants money that you identified for us. So we use some of our program money to partner with Danger Boat Productions. So we'll be making it, I guess I'm making an announcement now since it's public here. We'll be more formal, I guess, in making the announcement of cities to come. The concept that was on public radio, I think, last week about partnering with local cities to do improvisational comedy in about 8 to 10 cities in Minnesota this summer. We received input from more than 20 cities in Minnesota. So this idea of people coming together, music, conversation, having a chance to laugh and enjoy one another, people are craving that. And we know that we're going to be talking about the issues that are most important in those respective communities. So can't underscore it enough that while there may seem some toxicity within our society, there is also a lot of intentionality and want and desire for people to make connections within our society as well. So that will be one that we'll be reporting back when we talk about the dollars that we use from programming. To your question of leveraging potential opportunities on other projects, we are cautiously optimistic that the FY24 federal budget will be then passed. It's got out of the House. I think it's still knocking around a little bit within the Senate. And then what does it look like for the FY25 budget? I identified, again, Representative Hussein, and I've had some conversations and other legislators here in St. Paul because it will identify some funding for the Rondo Connect Bridge project, and that could potentially create some opportunities for creating cultural heritage districts with some federal dollars assist, and that could also identify opportunities in other cities and other areas throughout Minnesota for such additional supplemental funding. We're not quite there yet, but we are trying to be mindful of that and making sure that there are opportunities for Minnesota's projects to be in the forefront of administrative decision makers at the federal level.
Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and again, thank you, Mr. Lindsay, for all that you do. And I'll just kind of, I just have one other question, or just if you can just kind of tell members again, because you also do other things in your space, like, and have done work in like why treaties matter and some others, because some committee members might not even know about that work that you've done through the years and continue to do. So, but again, thank you for coming.
Director Lindsay.
Representative, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, really appreciate the question, and we have been very busy as well in other areas. One for this committee that might be of interest is that we recently signed an agreement with Shakopee, Mdewakanton Sioux community to publish 9 additional books in our Native American book series, so that will bring us up to 12, so that will be one of the largest Native American book series in the entire United States. These books will be published over the next 2.5 years. We have enlisted the support of our Minnesota Poet Laureate, Professor Gwen Westerman, and then Minneapolis's Poet Laureate, Hyde Erdrich, to oversee the editing of that process. And we're now trying to figure out the next 9 topics. There's about 25 names that are circulating, so we're having a lot of fun trying to get down to those 9. But we're really excited about this project. And when we get back, there will be the Indian Metro Educational Association meeting at the Minnesota Humanities Center. So again, our building is being used by many groups a lot within education to really facilitate and ensure that every kid in Minnesota has the best opportunity to succeed in the education classroom.
Chair Levy.
I think that's good. There's a lot beyond just the legacy work, and we also fund, funded great projects in the past, like Why Treaties Matter and other things that you've been involved with. But again, thank you.
Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair Cha. And Director Lindsay and your team, of course, all of the praise to you for this work. Excuse me. I have a question, though, given the gulf between demand and available funds, I would just be curious to hear a little bit about, in your decision-making process, do you work with the applications in terms of amounts? Do you, when you accept an application, do you fully fund it? Do you ever fund fewer, like offer less in order to get more money into the hands of more folks? I'd be curious to know how you're managing that. Is the objective to choose just the top projects according to your assessment, or is it to help as many folks as you can?
Director Lindsay.
Representative, Chair, members of the committee, it's a great question, and it is a little bit of an art, and it also depends on the feedback that we get from the independent review panel. Sometimes the independent review panel might rate the application, say, between the 4th highest rated one and the 8th highest rated one within a point, you know, within 2 or 3 points. Within that situation, we might decide to do more partial funding of those to kind of reflect how close it was in the decision making of the independent review panel. Where there is a large spread between, we may decide to provide more funding for the ones that are at the top of the list of the independent review panel. So it really kind of depends on the input, the feedback that we get from the independent review panel.
Representative Finke.
Thank you. Chair and Director Lindsay for that. And then I guess my second question then would be, is there, when you have the breakout, you know, we have the breakout of the pie chart, is there breakdown in terms of how that falls by applicant as well, or just by award? I mean, I heard you say earlier that your, you know, your LGBTQ applicant number was lower. And I'm just curious if that, you know, 2% of that went towards those projects, there were fewer of those projects. If there were more of those projects, would that number go up, or would that number not necessarily go up because it isn't, you know, the percentage of those projects that were getting funded versus the volume? Does that make sense?
Director Lindsay.
Representative, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, so the pie chart represents the number of applications which have been submitted. So Dristy will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that there are 7 applications which identified as LGBTQ. Now, again, I want to preface that there are several organizations that I identified in multiple that might also identify and provide service to the LGBT community. But the organizations which identified on the application that they wish to identify as LGBTQ, not multiple, that number is 7. And that's what represents the, is it 2%? Mm-hmm. 2% within the pie chart.
All right.
Representative Finke.
One more follow-up. Thank you for that mm-hmm. information. One of the things, and this is just thinking through how we can make this process, you know, the best we can, right? Because queer people are in every group, right? There is no demographic space that you can carve that does not include LGBTQ people. So when I see that sort of multiple one, I think, well, there's got to be a lot of queer folks served by those groups. But there's also just historically a tendency for people to say we're serving the LGBTQ community along with our more primary demographic target. Mm-hmm. And they're not really actually doing that. So that's just one of the things I was trying to tease out a little bit in that intersectional space, because we're everywhere, you know, but not everybody's actually intentionally doing the work that they say they're doing around our community. So just for what it's worth. Thank you.
Director Lindsay, any response?
Yep. Representative, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think the other aspect, because of some of the work that I have done in the past, is that individuals who might identify within the LGBT community might not wish to identify in that way, and they might lean more toward identifying multiple. I'm hoping that folks aren't doing so because they feel that there'll be a bias in the way in which we'll then review their respective application, but I do appreciate that there may be history for why organizations might wish to identify it in that way. I think what your second question was, to the extent, do we take into consideration and look at, are the applicants actually serving the communities with which they're identifying that they're serving within their application? So again, some of the questions do ask, who have you connected with within these respective communities? So that allows the independent review panel to kind of tease out the depth of which some applicants actually are doing the work, as opposed to just saying the work, that they're doing the work.
Good. All right, thank you, Director Lindsay. First of all, you know, I was looking at this outreach program about 16 radio station. And so I was a radio host on an AM station, 1430, for about 6 years doing public radio. And what I've learned about public radio is that a lot of seniors listen to radio, and a lot of farmers listen to radios because that's the only reception they have out there. And so thanks for that piece. I want to touch base on the cultural heritage emergency response in regards to, your help and the humanities help with Tujer Shong's memorial service. Tujer and myself were childhood friends. We've known each other for many, many years. And I want to particularly thank you on that piece because it meant something to me. It meant something to me because as a young refugee Hmong American growing up in America, I didn't have a voice. You know, I wasn't always like this. And I am who I am in terms of community space is because of people like Tujer Shong, who had the courage to make people laugh at him so that they would not laugh at me. And so I truly believe he was a North Star for our Hmong American community, and I thank you for that that piece. In closing, I just want to say thank you to the Humanities Center for the work you do in the preservation of culture, language, and heritage. For someone like myself, who is a refugee, who is now American, is that my culture, language, and heritage is all that I have left. You know,
in the coming years, the elders in my community will be gone. The veterans in that secret war will no longer be here. And all I have left to tell my children is my culture, language, and heritage. So I appreciate that. And thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for those heartfelt comments. Our hearts are full. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And with that, we'll move to our next agenda item, the Minnesota Historical Society. Welcome, Director Whitworth, to the Legacy and Finance Committee.
Thank you so much, Chair Cha, Republican Lee Backer, and members of the committee. My name is Kent Whitworth. I serve as Director and CEO of the Minnesota Historical Society. To my left is Avi Vishwanathan, our Senior Vice President for a new division that's Inclusion, Outreach, and Community Engagement. And of course, nearby is our colleague and trusted compatriot, David Kelleher, Vice President of Governmental Relations and Public Policy. It's an honor to be here this morning. And before I begin my remarks, I just want to add my thanks and admiration to our colleagues, to Director Lindsay and his colleagues at the Minnesota Humanities Center. We appreciate the opportunity to work in similar space with them, and we think that the upcoming 250th commemoration of the Declaration of Independence, the Semiquin Centennial of America, is an opportunity for us to deepen that partnership and that collaboration as we address historical topics that are relevant very much in today's society. So thank you, Kevin and colleagues. We are excited about the days ahead and the partnership that I think will continue to emerge. So with that, Mr. Chair, thank you so much for the opportunity to share the work of the history community that's been accomplished thanks to the generosity of legacy funding. I bring thanks from the history community, local, regional, and state here in Minnesota, for that opportunity that legacy funding provides. And it really distinguishes the level of work that we're able to accomplish in Minnesota. And I must say it's the envy of many states around the country. So we are grateful for this committee's continued commitment. Rather than put the PowerPoint together this morning, we chose to focus on the printed report. And I hope all of you have a copy of that in front of you. This is something that we do annually, which summarizes the many accomplishments of the history legacy funding. I will just highlight a few things that are actually featured on the cover. And we select those photos with a great deal of intentionality. If you look at the lower left, you will see the children's book illustrator, Dave Geister, who was working with students at the Minnesota State Fair last summer and promoting our Making Minnesota. It's a children's activity book that was made possible thanks to legacy funds, and I've just circulated a copy of that on both sides of the table. So we're grateful to distribute that aggressively across the state for free and appreciate legacy funding for that. And the lower right-hand corner of the cover is staff working on a LIDAR project at the Jeffers Petroglyphs Historic Site in southwest Minnesota. And this is to document the petroglyphs that are so important to all of us in Minnesota, but particularly to the Native American community. And so an example of us using technology to better preserve and present the myriad of stories behind the petroglyphs at Jeffers. And then finally, the image in the middle there, it's a smaller image, but you can see a ship's wheel, and that ship's wheel is from the Madeira shipwreck at Lake Superior. And that wheel is now on exhibit at a brand new exhibit at Split Rock Lighthouse and our visitor center, the first new exhibition at that historic site and frankly, a generation. And I want to thank Representative Scraba for joining us for that exhibit opening last spring, but delighted to point out just a few items that are featured and a couple of projects that are featured just on the cover alone. And it's just a little bit of a glimpse of the impact that our grant program and our statewide programming is having on Minnesota. If I could, I'd ask you to look inside the booklet, the report, and there is a single page that lays out the structure for our legacy amendment programming for history. And again, we will point out that we are very grateful and proud of the fact that the word history and cultural heritage are in the actual and actually in that legislative language or in that constitutional language. And if I could point out just below, there are five boxes at the bottom of that page that represent the various buckets, if you will, of funding. And that is, those are the vehicles through which we distribute funding that we receive through the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. I'll say just a little bit about each of those boxes, but when you see the report, you notice the tabs to the far right. There is a tab that corresponds with each one of those boxes. So if you'd like more information about those various programs within the Heritage Fund, there's plenty of information in the printed report. So the first box there is grants, statewide historical and cultural heritage grants. In FY23, we awarded 161 history grants totaling just over $6 million. Those grants were awarded in 60 different counties across the state to 140 organizations in Minnesota. And each of these grants is listed behind the tab, as I said, marked grants. If you're a little more interested in seeing how those funds were distributed, I would direct you to pages 12 and 13 that will show where those grants have gone since the start of legacy history funding. And I will add that our grants office and field services staff are proactive and ready to help your constituents apply for grants. As I said, as I introduced Mr. Vishwanathan, we've created a new division and are trying to lean into making these opportunities even more accessible. Avi might say a little bit more about that shortly. The second grouping is MNHS programming. It's labeled statewide programs, and those are programs operated by the Historical Society. And I'll focus on just one area, that's exhibits. While mentioning that there are many, many more examples provided in the report that, that go far beyond exhibitions. But it's a great way for us to reach various visitors, for them to engage with collections, to engage with various interactives, to engage with written narratives that all bring history to life. I made reference to a brand new exhibition at Split Rock Lighthouse that opened last spring. But we have funding, and we've highlighted a couple of exhibit projects that have taken place at the History Center in the last year, thanks in part to legacy funding, and there are many more on the way. We are in the early stages of developing a new exhibition at Jeffers Petroglyphs, and very excited about that. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I will hand off to my colleague, Avi Vishwanathan.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Avi Vishwanathan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Avi Vishwanathan, and as Kent mentioned, I am the Senior Vice President of Inclusion, Outreach, and Community Engagement with the Historical Society. I'm going to talk a little bit about programs and partnerships through the MNHS. And our mission is to serve all the people of Minnesota by creating powerful engagement with history, cultivating curiosity, and foster a more inclusive, empathetic, and informed society. And our programs and partnerships are a way for us to do that. One of the programs that I wanted to highlight first is the Veterans Advisory Group, which is discussed in the report. Our Veterans Advisory Group had been working mostly to support the exhibit creation for years, the exhibit at historic Fort Snelling. And we had worked with a number of veterans to help hear their stories and their connections to that space and how that could help impact the stories that we were telling there. Since that time, as we move forward, we know that our veteran engagement needs to expand just beyond the fort, and we have started investing more time and energy in diversifying that group of people to include people from different ethnic and racial backgrounds, different ages, different parts of the state, and different abilities to include veterans with disabilities in our engagement. We are hoping that that work, as we work through this year, will lead into commemoration of the end of the war in Vietnam in 2025 and the Secret War, as well as the 50th anniversary of those two, the ends of those conflicts comes up next year. In addition, Kent had mentioned exhibits. Currently at the History Center, we have an exhibit called Black Citizenship in the Age of Jim Crow, which is a traveling exhibit from New York. But to add to that, in conjunction with that exhibit, we've held a series of programs to discuss Black history in Minnesota. The night before the exhibit opened to the public, we supported an event that we call Kanara Gathering, which was an opportunity to bring Black community members and other people who are interested in Black history together to talk about how their stories, their interests, their research connects with Black history across the country, the larger story being told, and what its roots and connections are in the state of Minnesota. We learned a great deal about how people like Booker T. Washington have relationships and connections to people within this state. And we were able to see what we believe is the most complete audio of Dr. Martin Luther King's speech at the University of Minnesota in 1967. We had discovered through some of our partners that there is video of part of the speech, audio of part of the speech, and a local historian and documentarian was able to take those two and put them together and create, again, what is the most complete version of that speech available today for an important speech that took place less than a year before Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated. In addition to programs, I'd also mentioned partnerships, which is the fourth tab in the book. First, I wanted to highlight a partnership with an organization called the Irreducible Grace Foundation. That is a small organization in St. Paul. They recently had purchased a building, and in that building wanted to take an opportunity to honor Black leaders and legacy keepers of Black history in St. Paul. They worked with youth to research individuals and to be able to create a plaque to talk about the stories of each of those individuals in that space. We supported that organization through funding and through other resources such as access to our libraries and archives and some consultation with our exhibit staff. Through that research, the organization actually also discovered that that building that they purchased was used as a school, Native American school. And we worked with our Native American Initiatives Department within the Historical Society to capture stories of people who had both taught and learned in that school as well, to be able to share the intersection of Black and Native history in St. Paul. Kent had also mentioned some, you know, exhibit work like I talked about before. Currently, we still have an exhibit, The Life and Art of Charles Schulz, up at the History Center. Hopefully, you have been able to see that exhibit. It's a wonderful exploration of a person who is from St. Paul, went to high school at Central High School here in St. Paul. And because of that connection, we wanted to explore ways to engage people, younger people, in that exhibit, because many of us are connected to Schulz through the comics and through Peanuts, and we wanted younger people to be able to connect in that space too. And so we started working with Central High School, Charles Schulz's high school, around working with an art class to create their own comics. And so we worked directly with the class who learned about Schulz, had a chance to visit the exhibit. We partnered with a local teaching artist who went to a drawing class at the high school, and using prompts from books that Charles Schulz had created, about 20 students created their own short comic strips that were on display at the History Center for about 6 months. That was from October through just last week is when they came down. We are giving the art back to those students so that they can keep that hopefully for the rest of their lives and within their space. It created a lot of attention, and we had a lot of media attention, and some of the students had the opportunity to actually be on news stories that were carried across the country, which was very exciting for those young people. The last partnership that I wanted to highlight centers around LGBTQIA plus history. Last year, actually in 2022, we started a project with Twin Cities Pride to do a story mapping of historic spots within the Twin Cities in LGBTQIA history. That story map actually ended up winning an award through the American Association of State and Local History last year. But inspired from that work, we created an exhibit at Mill City Museum that was up last summer that was specifically about historic sites in the Gateway District around Mill City in Minneapolis that highlighted specific key sites for that community in that area. That exhibit is actually, it's sort of modular, so we've taken it down. We will have the opportunity and are working with different organizations to be able to have that exhibit hosted at their spaces as well, to be able to carry that into the community and not have it just be dependent on us. We're also expanding that story mapping project across the state. Have been working with organizations in different parts of the state, particularly right now, a project in Moorhead, to be able to capture oral history from people from that community and to be able to add to the sites on that map for other people to see moving forward.
Mr. Chair, we could go on and on, but we felt like it was important just to give you somewhat of a snapshot of just a handful of grants and programs that have unfolded in the last year or so you better understand the difference that these legacy funds are making. I would also like to address the issue of access. We are well aware of the language in the 2023 legislation instructing an emphasis on access, and because in some respects, not all respects, some respects our work is site and museum driven, we have taken several steps that we're in the process of rolling out that will, we hope, remove barriers so that we truly can serve all Minnesotans as our mission statement commits. And I'll just mention a few of those things. We are offering 4 free days at the Minnesota History Center and around our network. This is modeled after the state park free days. They don't align exactly, but there's some overlap. So there are 4 free days that we have introduced. We have been able to return to Thursday evenings at the History Center being free. And so we're excited about that. We continue to give field trip assistance across our 26 site network, and that is thanks in part to legacy funding, but also thanks to private sector funding that enables us to help not only with admission costs, but also with transportation costs. And then finally, we're very excited to be signing on to a new national program called Museums for All. And I think there are about 800 or plus organizations that are a part of this program that started, it was developed through the Institute of Museum and Library Services. It's a federal agency. But again, the goal here is to make sure that we have removed barriers so that if folks cannot afford an admission fee, there are no questions asked. We're not asking for documentation of any sort. And by being a part of this national program, we also can make sure that our frontline staff is trained with real sensitivity and hospitality. But this is another new initiative that we're rolling out that we're very excited to be a part of. So just wanted to touch briefly on access. And then as we close, I would just say that that as you are potentially considering supplemental funding during the session, we welcome the opportunity to add to our statewide grants program. There is always more demand than funding. That is a recurring theme that you've heard this morning, but that is absolutely our case. There are at least twice as many requests as grants made, so we definitely feel that need, and if there was supplemental funding, we would direct that toward our competitive grant program. So with that, we will stand for questions.
Member, any questions? Representative Becker.
This is more point of information, unless, and this is just to make sure, but it looks like, Chair, if we look at Senate District 22A for the grant listing, I think they got put in the wrong county. Pipestone and Rock County are, would be in Joe Schumacher's district, but it got listed to be in Representative Olson's district, Senate Seat 22, House District 28. Laverne is Rock County, Pipestone, unless it extended into it, but just FYI.
Director Whitworth.
Chairlady, Representative Becker, I'm going to yield to Avi, who I think has got some information from David.
Avi?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Becker, I believe some of these may be based off of the previous legislative districts, so we will make sure that we update that in our future tracking.
Lead Becker.
I mean, it's just obviously people, you know, with the map before, but I don't think that district went that, I think, I would have to look up. I don't think those were the right, even in the old one. It's not to bust your guys' chops. Okay? That's not the point of it, okay? It's just that the public will look at this, and we are responsible for these dollars. And unfortunately, if we don't list it correctly, then there's going to be that wonder as if we're investing it correctly.
Vice President,
I should be using the mic. I'm sorry, Chair. So, but that would be the concern. And that's enough said, I guess.
Vice President Evie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll go back through these and make sure that we have them accurate moving forward. I appreciate the that point.
Thank you. Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Chair Chan. Thank you for the presentation today. I have great respect for your institution. I think that my first time seeing Hmong people actually in history is actually when I visited, when you had the exhibit there, and I was so pleasantly surprised to see a lot of my family's history there. And my children, actually, my daughter's 24 and 20 now, but much younger when we went, asked me, how did they get those? And I said, I don't even know. So I really appreciate that you all have resources and however you're connecting with community that you're able to get this to really share with everyone else. And I think the reason why I think it's important to acknowledge this and say this is because the 50th year of the Southeast Asian conflict ending is going to be next year. And we have such a large presence of Hmong people and Southeast Asians, Lao, Vietnamese here within in our state, and it's made our state richer and better as every immigrant group has made it. And so I just, you know, to kind of keep that on your radar and really thinking about how do we support communities as we celebrate this 50 year. And I know that, you know, my grandfather was a colonel in the Secret War, and he never got to see that. He died before your exhibit. And, you know, he really never got to see his service in the sacrifices he made ever in history, ever in documents, ever in any kind of exhibit. And, you know, we have so few of our veterans left, and it would be really great to figure out how do we ensure that we honor all those. So I just wanted to make sure to sort of put a plug into that for maybe people who might not know what is coming. It was very significant for us, and I appreciate all of you always looking for opportunities to partner with community and ensuring that their history is accurately reflected in all the things that you do. So thank you so much.
Director Wilbeth, any reply?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Vang here. Very much this is on our radar, and we have appreciated conversations with you and other members of this committee and of the legislature. Avi made reference to that, and we see this as a great opportunity to deepen relationships and to steward collections well and stories well. So thank you so much.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair Shaw. Director, thank you for all the work you do for Minnesota's history. A lot of it is in northeastern Minnesota and everywhere. And when I look at the colors on the map, I'm like, wow. You know, a lot of projects that get done. And I think it says something about tourism and the way tourists, people visiting us, look at history and try to figure out where we are, how we got here. And I find it amazing in the metro when I start, I'm spending more time here than I ever have, and I'm learning about the history, and the different restaurants I go to gets me more intrigued to hang out in the neighborhoods, and it's quite a fascinating community. But one of the things I encourage our members, because we did get a tour, thank you, at Capital Investments, different committee, but it was quite extensive tour. It's what you guys have there is phenomenal. But I think if we look at what Representative Backer was talking about, and I think it is from 22, because the dates are from 22 to 23, but even so, if we were all just to go look at other districts, what are being done, it would get a pretty good idea of what you all are doing with the money and how the communities benefit from it. And you kind of get a better idea of who we are and what we are and what we represent. So I encourage what you're doing in the right direction, and I think it's a good use of our funds. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Chaw, Representative Scrob. You are modeling curiosity, which we think is such an important concept that leads to empathy. And there was reference earlier to, you know, the polarization that at times we feel. But if we can all be curious and we can deepen our understanding, I think things will look an awful lot different. And so to me, that in a nutshell is the relevance of history. And we are driving, you know, aggressively to that, to serve all Minnesotans and to encourage people to be curious not only about their stories, but about their neighbors' stories. And so thank you so much for that affirmation.
Scraba?
Good.
Thank you, Chair. Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Chair Cha. Again, Mr. Whitworth, thank you for coming today. And thank you for the work that you do with the Historical Society. And I mentioned earlier with the humanities, I think you've been good stewards of the funds, and I think that's important. I really appreciate that you're listening to this committee. I think this committee, with the team that we have here, is really, you responded. I think the House is doing a little bit better job. Chair Her does a great job over there, but Fung Her. But, you know, I think the committee here spoke about accessibility, and you listened, and that's really amazing. So thank you for that. Having these free days are very important to this committee, and opening up to all people in the public, and thank you for listening. So I'm really grateful for that. And I was glad that you mentioned field trips, because field trips are, you know, I've been here in the legislature for a few years, and it shocks me how few trips I have, and I'm relatively close, my district, you know, and we just don't see as many buses of kids coming in as we did early in my career. Now, I mean, I think we have quite a few visitors today, but we don't have as many students, so it's sad to me a little bit, you know, because I've, you know, had opportunities to talk to people, and a lot of times, you know, I get papers, there's still like a Chatfield News, I get a newspaper from Chatfield, and it said there's like these old articles, and they, in the 50s, they came to the Twin Cities, you know, a bus from Chatfield, how neat is that? And so anyways, I'm glad that you're thinking of trying to get more kids, I'm guessing, on field trips, so I hope you're successful, and that's important to me. One of the things I just kind of want to throw out there for the future is audiobooks. I know you have a lot of books, and a lot of people are interested. I became a few years ago more interested in e-books and audiobooks, and it'd just be really nice if some of your works that are in your possession, whether it's a Native American writer or I've had an opportunity to listen to a few Hmong storytellers or writers, but there just aren't as many audiobooks in some of these historical pieces. Maybe we could live without Erdahl's books, but
that's up to you.
But it'd be nice if we could figure out a way to encourage some of your pieces that are in your bookstore and in your collection that are and have them turned into audiobooks for more citizens. The other thing is I want to thank you on History Day. A lot of members here might not have noticed, but Legacy, we have a goalie sitting right by me, but one of the things that you bought really touched me with Legacy money, and I'm just going to give you an opportunity just to tell a quick story of one of the purchases that you were able to make with Legacy funds. So if you would be willing to do that.
Be happy to.
Chair.
Yes, Director Willith.
Thank you, Chair Cha, Chair Lilly. Chair Lilly, you touched on so many things. I would like to go back to field trips, the audio books concept, but I'll start with the acquisition. Marc-Andre Fleury, who is a goalie of the Wild, probably a Hall of Famer. I am becoming a hockey fan. I'm not a hardcore hockey fan yet, but I'm working at it. But we had the opportunity to acquire a mask that he wore in warm-ups at a game, I believe it was just last season, that was honoring Minnesota's indigenous heritage. And it is the mask is beautiful. It's a work of art. It's a Dakota artist that painted this mask that was then worn. It's interesting because I think there was controversy with him wearing the mask during the warm-ups. But he took a stand, and as I recall, his wife is indigenous, maybe a First Nation member. But that was a high-profile, very significant acquisition that we were able to make thanks to the funding available to us for Legacy. And that was on display at our History Matters Day at the Capitol a few weeks ago. Representative Vang Her talked about connecting with historic images. That's what is really a point of distinction for our institution. We have vast collections that represent all Minnesotans, and when there's that personal and that tangible connection to the past, Representative Hussein, I'm thinking about the tour that Representative Scraba referenced, and we were looking at those jerseys, and we were wondering if at some point maybe your high school football jersey might work its way into those collections. But all that being said, history gets exciting when it's personal. It gets very personal when there's a tangible connection. So, again, we're very proud of the collections, and we continue to build the collections to reflect the emerging stories of Minnesota and Minnesotans. If I could just go quickly to the field trip issue, that is a core audience of ours. Pre-pandemic, we were serving more than 250,000 students through field trips across our historic site network. I'll be honest with you, that's the slowest returning audience, but we are making real progress. And so we will continue to work at that, and we'll continue to remove barriers so that as many Minnesotans, particularly school students, can experience a visit to the History Center or one or more of our historic sites. And then I'll conclude with the ebook. Yes, we have many, many books in our collection, rare books in our collections, but we also, many of you may not realize, we have the oldest press in Minnesota. We were the first entity to publish in Minnesota, and we continue to publish aggressively, and again, this is another way for us to tell the emerging stories of Minnesota and of Minnesotans, and we are developing a new podcast program, but I think maybe not just featuring interviews with artists of these books, but maybe even doing recorded audio books of some of these more popular publications. I think of the importance of the title A Good Time for the Truth that came out in the about 8-10 years ago, and that was a profound publication at the time, and then during the pandemic and all that we dealt with there, that was a book that really I think met important needs and provided valuable context to the people in Minnesota and beyond. And so something like that might be a good place to start. So thank you so much for highlighting all three of those parts of our work.
Thank you,
Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Director Wentworth. So I also want to thank you for your major exhibits, and you mentioned the one that's currently up there, and I think those exhibits are really just so worthwhile because they connect us. And so Chair Her mentioned the Hmong event, the exhibit that you had, and I was there for the Somali exhibit. And but those exhibits, I think, really connect us because we realize that, you know, that we have a lot in common. Is the one that's up there right now, is that Legacy? Is there Legacy help in that? I know you're doing it. I just want to make sure that that's. And then so just you can make a comment on that. And then I was a little upset because Vice Chair Hussein had a lot more, you know, a lot more things in his district. but then he made up for it because I've never seen this photo before ever of a streetcar in North St. Paul from the 50s. So,
Director Willeth?
So I think we're good. No.
Cheers, Chair Lilly. Thank you. Grateful that, as I said, each of those photographs are strategically selected. And yes, to answer your question, black citizenship in the age of Jim Crow is Avi said, is a traveling exhibition from the New York State Historical Society, but that is partially supported by Legacy. And I think certainly some of the programming of the Charles Schulz exhibit, which is up, still up, it was also supported by Legacy. So really, really grateful. And we did a great program just about two or three weeks ago around the Franklin character in the as a part of the Charles Schulz exhibit. And the person that inspired that character was actually there, and it was just deeply meaningful. So great that you feel that sense of connection. That's why we do it every day. And
thanks.
Pleased to say that our visitation is coming back. We are, last fiscal year, we served on site across our network more than 850,000 guests. So we're working our way back up to that million plus figure that we had hit pre-pandemic, but got a little more work to do with the school groups.
Thank you. Vice Chair Hassan.
Thank you. I'm a big fan of the Minnesota History Society, and I'm excited for us to see the bonding tour. Not only that, we have seen it throughout the state while we was traveling, and Chair Lilly and I, how many great things that you have, partnerships and throughout the state, not only community in the state of in St. Paul and area, but you are expanding, and we really appreciate it for bringing us the history together. And did you say Thursday is a free day, or is that
Thursday evenings? Every Thursday evening after 4 o'clock, it is free admission to the Minnesota History Center. So that's something we have reinstated, and feel like that's another way to remove barriers that might keep people from coming. So,
because my older son is like, he's kind of leaning to now historical studies, and I'm going to bring him in. Thank you. And the other things that I was trying to make a joke about it and see if we could see more short films. We do have elite Ardell movies, and we've been able to watch that while we was traveling. So maybe we need to see more, like, not audios, but like history short films in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have like 5 minutes here, so let me do this. First of all, thank you for coming down here today. I really appreciate the brochures because it highlights and it honors the hard work that the Historical Society does and where the money is going. And I also want to thank all Minnesotans for participating in this, and I'm sure they would love to have their own copy of this. So thank you very much for the effort. History. History is so important to all of us, and I'm just going to talk about me and what it means to me in this current space and time. As you know, next year is going to be the 50th anniversary of Hmong Americans in Minnesota. That war that was fought in Laos was not the Vietnam War, but it was the secret war in Laos, which my father was a CIA recruit from 61 to 1975 who served under the CIA American Army. And that is the reason why I am here. That is the reason why I became a refugee. And that is the story. And in saying that, you know, I know that the Historical Society and its community will do a great job and find ways to honor that for many Minnesotans. Because You know, Minnesota's history in regards to the Hmong American is very important because there are 9 Hmong legislators here in the state of Minnesota. There are no Hmong legislators in the other 49 states in the United States of America. And so we should be proud as Minnesotans for providing opportunities for a refugee like myself to have an opportunity to sit in this chair. So I want to thank all Minnesotans and each and every one of you. Thank you to this member of this community, committee. I know you love it. That's why you're here, and we're still talking, right? And so with that, we hear you in regards to the funding that is needed, and this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.